You're listening to the Confidence Podcast, your one-stop shop for motivation, inspiration, and confidence to help you boldly take action on your dreams. I'm your host, Trish Blackwell, internationally recognized confidence coach and founder of the College of Confidence, and I teach women how to take their thoughts captive, how to step out of the shadows of self-doubt, and how to courageously step into their purpose with confidence. It's time to train your thoughts. Let's get started. Guys, and it is indeed time to train your thoughts. I'm your host, Trish Blackwell of the Confidence Podcast. You can think of me as your friend, your sister, your confidence coach. I'm your encourager. I just am so grateful for the opportunity to be a part of your life, a small voice in your week, to bring you encouragement, to remind you of who God says that you are, and to push you to the next level of being just totally alive in this world. Not cautiously alive, but totally unashamedly yourself, so that you can shine bright, be bold, do the things that you are called to do in this world without worrying what people think, without having insecurity and self-doubt or imposter syndrome holding you back. Now, this is episode number 380, and this is a subject that is going to be we're going pretty vulnerable today. So I'm going to peel back the layers, and we're going to talk about something that's sometimes taboo and shameful. And so this week we're going to talk about why high achievers, in particular high achievers, so you might be a perfectionist, you might be a lead athlete, you might be the CEO of a company, anybody who has a lot of pressure in themselves and who expects a lot of themselves, why high achievers binge eat and how to stop. And so we're going to be talking about something I know firsthand that is considered taboo and shameful. And my prayer today as we talk is that by opening dialogue, it will remove the stigma and help set you free to pursue healing and hope. And if it's not for you, for someone you know, because there are, I know, thousands and thousands and millions of people who say that they stress eat or emotionally, and when we really were honest enough to look at the behavior and the motivation behind it, I would probably categorize it as binge eating. Don't worry, we're going to go into what is binging and how does this qualify, like why is this relevant, and is this truly as much of an epidemic as you're claiming it to be, Trish? And right, I'm so actually really proud of myself for the content of today's episode, of at least what I'm planning on sharing, because you guys, if you've followed my story, you've been reading any of my books over the past couple of years, one of my first books, actually both of my books, cover binge eating, and I always mention it, but I've never really gone in depth about why it started, how I used it as an addiction and a drug of choice. And then really more interestingly, I think, is the correlation and the relationship between high achievers and binge eaters. And while we're at it, we're going to go into exactly what qualifies as a binge. We're going to talk about the real thing that binge eating behaviors are indicators of, like how do you peel back the layers and figure out why am I actually eating, and like how did this start? And then we're going to talk very tangibly about five ways you can stop binge eating. But before we do that, let's go to our review of the week. It is from Sustaining Sarah, 5 stars. She said, humbling and grounding. And this is what her review says. I recently went through a lot of changes, a new job and a new city of residence. During that time, I lost a lot of myself and my relationship with God and started to lack. I started listening to Trish, and not only does she help me find parts of me to fall in love with again, but she also reminds me to love God and his ever-watching eyes of grace. Thank you, Trish. Most of all, thank you for not being afraid to be honest and real about the struggle in life, especially not being afraid to remind everyone of God's greatness and love. And Sustaining Sarah, thank you, sister. I am sending you love, extra love today. And you guys, if you haven't yet written a review in iTunes, it's one of the most helpful ways to help us reach more listeners, more encouragers to continue this movement. We're mobilizing. I really believe that this community of women and men, I know you guys are listening too, but specifically of women worldwide, we are rising up. We are breaking the shackles of self-doubt. We are stepping up and saying we are mobilizing movement that matters. We are changing the world by stopping this overthinking and over distracted and over busy and over pressured type of life that culture has told us is success. And instead we're claiming success for what comes when we are self-confident and courageous enough to step into our calling and to live out the assignment that we're here on this world to live out. So let's get into it. High achievers, let's talk about who are these so-called high achievers that this particular episode on binge eating is in relation to. And as I thought about high achievers, honestly, most of you listening probably are a high achiever, because if you're listening to a show called The Confidence Podcast, chances are you are really, really motivated to be the best version of yourself. It's interesting, when I first met my husband 10 years ago and he knew I was passionate about confidence and I was starting the fledgling kind of like beginnings of content creation and building my brand and as a confidence coach, there was this perception of like, oh gosh, you must work with people who like, I don't know, just truly don't know who they are and they have no goals. And I said, well, yeah, that's honestly, if we're transparent enough, that's everyone. Like we all have to do the work. But then really the people that my coaching resonates most for are high achievers, because the high achiever, it's the perfectionist, the type A, the president of the student body, the go-getter, the Olympic athlete, the beautiful model, the Miss America contestant, that is always striving, and that also has this extra pressure from the world around, who is applauding them for everything they're doing, and the amount of work that goes into productivity and performance and looking the part of being confident is so time consuming that the inner work of being confident is harmed. It ends up not getting fed. And so chances are, if you're listening, you're a high achiever. Chances are, if you're listening, you got big goals. You are a go-getter. You are so excited to grow, but that the working on the inner confidence is the key that's going to get you to the next level. So, I think I resonate really well with high achievers and overachievers and type A's and Enneagram 3's and because that's who I am. For me, I wanted to stand out in my life. I have this I was born competitive, right? Like my mom laughs. Oh, y'all, it's embarrassing. My first race when I was five years old. Not my first swim race, but my first running race. We were doing the mile or something. It was called the Great Train Race in downtown Fredericksburg, Virginia. And I pushed kids over. They were in my way. Like that was the justification. Mom, I wanted to win and that kid was in my way. And so rather than run around them, I pushed them down. And I say that and laughing embarrassingly. Like I'm uncomfortable telling you that, but if that gives you an insight to the competitive drive, this desire to be a best I've had since I was little, it will help you as I explain to you how I fell into the toxic and destructive patterns of binge eating. So you've got this motivated, focused little girl, out desperate. I wanted to stand out. I wanted to be exceptional. I wanted to be worthy of being seen and loved. And I was convinced that the only way for me to do that was to become an Olympic swimmer. And that was the route. I thought I had figured it out. And I was on my way. I was getting a lot of great success in the pool and achievement after achievement. And I was, but then when I stopped standing out as much as an athlete, I started panicking, because for me, that was the route. That was who I was to be remembered for. I was the little girl in the summer pool, like with ab muscles that popped through her Speedo, like a Speedo one piece when I was 8 years old. I remember getting so many comments on that. And now when 3, 4, 5, 6 years later, my performance and being the best in the nation or best in the world wasn't what was getting talked about, I thought, well, who am I? And so if I wasn't that ripped athlete who would win no matter what, then if my performance wasn't there, then I needed to look the part as best as I could. And so I kept putting more and more pressure on me. So I thought if I didn't do that, if I didn't do these things and make myself look in a way, look, act, and perform and achieve in a way that was impressive, that would get the applause of people, I thought I was forgettable. Like I thought that I would just be forgotten. And in fact, you guys, I'm going to do something a little bit different today. I am working on my next book. I'm pretty excited. Don't know yet. Haven't figured out exactly who we're going to publish through or when we're going to release it. But I'm going to share a segment. Unedited. This is unedited, so don't judge, okay? But I'm going to share with you a little bit of insight of how this desire to be remembered started getting put around my body. And don't worry, this links to food, because food was something I controlled. And when life got out of control, it's what I used to numb myself. And that's where the binge eating pattern started for me. So here's what is, I'm taking an excerpt from a chapter I'm working on. It started with a comment from a friend. We were 10 years old at our neighborhood pool. I was wearing my Speedo one piece, and she, her gorgeous twin sister were wearing skimpy string bikinis that I would have never been allowed to wear. Every boy in Lake of the Woods wanted to date those twins. I was just happy to be friends with them to get cool points by association. She didn't mean to hurt me, but her words stung my heart in a way that burned deeply into my identity for over a decade later. "Your brother is so hot," she said. "You look nothing like him. Are you sure you have the same parents?" Now, laughs were had, and I waited desperately for the whistle to blow, the lifeguard being my salvation to escape underwater into the pool. I remember diving in, trying to run away from the shame. Everyone wanted to be seen, to see and be seen with my brother. And if, according to her words, I was truly nothing like him, that meant that I wasn't worth looking at. I was embarrassed of myself and how I looked. There wasn't anything I could inherently point to either. My body was athletic, ripped actually for a little girl, and I was well liked for being a good swimmer. But being liked for what I could do felt very different than being liked for who I was or how I looked. In high school and college, I convinced myself I was forgettable. Sure, my teammates, classmates, and friends knew where I was, but in general, I felt like I looked so average that I was easily confused with other people. And since no one could see me, and the only way to stand out was to do things in a way that I could be seen. Now, perhaps you're like me. I believed I had value for what I could do, not for who I was. I desperately craved to matter, but how could I matter if I couldn't be seen, if I was merely average and forgettable? And you guys, I'm going to pause there, and I'm skipping ahead in the chapter, and I'm going to share with you one of the first people who challenged me in these thoughts. Before you ever believe that God sees you, you first have to experience being seen for who you are, not for what you do, by being a human. Now, this sounds basic and obvious, but for most of us, we live such busy, achievement-focused lives that we connect being seen with what we do. But being seen for what you do isn't very impressive. It's rather dull and expected, actually. In a world that celebrates attention and fame, it's easy to understand how we get it wrong and we believed the same. If we only feel seen for what we do, for how we look, for what we achieve, or who we know, then we aren't really even seen for who we are at the core anyway. It is what on the inside it's what is on the inside that matters the most. God looks at the heart, and if you are able to do a worldwide poll outside of social media, people would report feeling most connected and influenced by people because of who they were on the inside, not because of the outside. Before I met Denise, there were countless people who saw me for me. I didn't know it, though. I was too distracted performing and achieving, so I misinterpreted their acceptance and love. It happened that the more I excelled, the more well-loved I felt, and so I developed a deep need for status, success, and being impressive. I wanted to stand out. I wanted to be seen. I'll never forget the first 10 minutes of my first therapy appointment. Denise sat across from me silently. She was waiting for me to finish. She'd asked who I was, and I had spent 5 minutes listing out the things I did. Allowing silence to fill the room, she said, "Finally, I didn't ask you what you do. I asked you who you are." Ouch. Yeah. I was confused. She went deeper, though, and without hesitation. "Trish, I'm not impressed by what you do. I'm eager to learn who you are. That's what matters. I work with a lot of people who do a lot of impressive things. But you need to know that those things, they don't even stir me. I care about you." That was it. Denise called me out and called me up. She was the first person who challenged me to see myself differently. I never thought that way before. My whole life was an effort to do things well enough that I would be seen or noticed. Peace is what I felt as I continued to meet with Denise. In her presence, I knew she wouldn't care what I had accomplished that week, how much revenue my business had brought in, or how brilliant or void my writing had been. She detached my value from those things, and she leaned in to listen closely to the ponderings of my heart, to the part of me that really makes me me. This is me leaning into you. You can let your guard down. I don't really care where you came from, who you know, or what you can list out that qualifies you as to be someone of importance, because you are important, separate from all those things. And I'm here to tell you that I care about you, not what you do, but who you are. And you guys, we can take, that's the end of the little section of writing that I pulled out, but the reason I wanted to share is I want you to have permission to take the pressure off of yourself. You've heard me say that if you're a high achiever, you've heard certainly countless of my podcasts where we talk about this and how to do it, but there's this permission that needs to come. You need an interaction with another person on such a deep level that you realize that it's, I'm happy for your accomplishments. I want to help you do even better things. But those things are completely separate from the value that I see in you. And so let me share a little bit more. For me, my story with binge eating was a byproduct of this high achieving mentality. I was addicted to food, and that phrase brought me a lot of shame. It wasn't until just recently I was able to say I was addicted to food. Now, the problem with being addicted to food or having disordered eating patterns is that you can't just quit food. It's not like a drug where you can claim that you're an addict, not claim, but you call yourself an addict, and you therefore get to just go in full detox and not touch that drug again. Now, anybody who's struggled with a relationship with food knows that one of the most challenging elements of a struggle with food is that you still have to eat. And so finding a balance, if you've ever used food as a drug, and by that I mean if you've ever used food as an escape, as a numbing mechanism, as a way to fill a void, as a way to distract yourself, as a way to pass time, as a way to feel loved, then you've experienced a mismatched relationship with food, and you can't just quit food. And so for me, my binge eating started around 15, 16, but it was always collateral with high intensity exercise. So if I binged, I would then also, I would either purge or I would punish myself with exercise so that I could keep this dark, dirty secret. I was so ashamed to be somebody who was so disciplined in every element of my life, who was the president of every club and in friends with every social group, who seemed to be able to manage everything in life except what I put in my mouth. That horrified me. I thought, if what people see, the 99% of me that they see focused, high achieving, super, not even just little disciplined, ultra disciplined. What would people say if they knew that I couldn't control myself around food sometimes? And the problem is the complication that comes with binge eating is often there's a general sense of mistrust that happens because you don't know when you're going to stay disciplined and stay focused, or if something's going to trigger you and you go over. So I actually became afraid of kitchens, afraid of food, afraid of restaurants, without actually being able to proclaim them as fears. But it's really, I had anxiety anytime I was in those situations and parties and circumstances because I didn't know if I was going to be quote unquote good and have no problem with it, or if I was going to struggle and spend the whole time thinking about what was on that table, and if I could, should I go for that cupcake? Could I just have one cupcake, or is it going to turn into 10? I didn't know because it was so unpredictable. It was a volatile relationship, but when my life felt unstable, food was steady. And so the more I battled insecurity about my worth and acceptance, about feeling disposable and being susceptible to deep anxiety emotions, and more I felt rejected, the more I used food. Actually, sometimes when I was going down and feeling negative and overwhelmed, then I would sometimes, the binge would be a byproduct of that, to prove to myself that I deserved to be rejected. Yeah, I wanted to prove my inadequacy. I wanted to prove that I was unlovable. I wanted to prove to myself that all the things that were happening circumstantially that were things that I deserved, because look, if I couldn't even control food, who was I, right? And so this underlying subconscious message of unworthiness consistently, the challenge was this, it was unworthiness, but also shame, because I also didn't know that anybody else in the world struggled with food the way I did. I thought I was a freak. I thought this was ridiculous behavior. And I want to break it down to you. The reason I wanted to do this podcast today is because I wanted you to know that this binge eating, and especially in high achievers, actually makes a ton of sense psychologically, because the more pressure we put on ourselves to perform so that we have our worth. And like I was telling you with my story with my therapist, when she first said, well, whoa, Trish, like I asked you who you were, not what you do, like not all the things you like make you you. We are so used to identifying by what we do. And the more we can improve what we do and put pressure on ourselves and be better at time management and be more organized and be more successful and take harder and harder classes and get into the top schools and do this and be a little bit just 10 pounds less and all of these high, high standards, the more pressure we put on there, the less we actually give ourselves, we actually nourish ourselves. We stop taking care of ourselves. And so we burn the candle at both ends, and we emotionally we start being emotionally mean to ourselves so that we can kind of get ourselves to that next level. And what suffers is the real part of us. And so it only makes sense that the more pressure you put on yourself, there's eventually a tipping point where all of a sudden there's going to be a backlash, right? And so for so many high achievers, it's that you have to do everything so perfectly, and there's so much focus, and it takes so much effort, management, exhaustion, social interactions, things that are emotionally, socially, and mentally draining, that at the end of the day, chances are we have not plugged ourselves in, we have not recharged ourselves, we have not taken care of some of our basic human needs. And so it's not an issue. Binge eating in high achievers is not an issue of willpower. It's an issue of exhaustion. Because at the end of the day, your willpower is on self-discipline is like a battery, the life of a battery. It's you start losing its battery life. It stops being accessible to us. It's not that you don't have the willpower at night. It's not that you're not quote unquote good at night. It's that you're just plumb exhausted. And if we could just call it what it is, this is an exhaustion epidemic that we could start then to tackle. We take away the stigma and shame from binge eating and call it what it is, that it's not just, oh, sometimes I emotionally eat, sometimes I have a couple cookies too many. No, let's just put it in open so that we can address it. I was not able to step into a place of healing and freedom in this until I sought help and gave myself permission to talk about this in an open way that doesn't have shame. And I don't know if you know this, but approximately 2.8 million Americans have binge eating disorder. And that is according to the National Eating Disorder Association, NEDA. Is the most common eating disorder in the United States. And listen, as we talk, I don't care if you want to call this an eating disorder or if it makes you feel better to call it disordered eating. Whatever it is, if it's not a healthy pattern, if it's anything that's out of work, if you find yourself thinking about food or your body or what you're going to eat and how you're managing your calories more than you know seems like it would be healthy or normal, then you have a disordered eating relationship, right? It's just like an addict. I really struggled to call myself a food addict, because I would go sometimes a week where I ate quote unquote perfectly. And then there'd be a few days where I just went off the rails. And I thought, well, is that an addict? I mean, what is a food addict? If I was a food addict, would I have been 100 pounds overweight? Except that I'm always been the same weight. I'm always, I don't know, give or take 120, 130, whatever. Then I did some soul searching and realized an addict is somebody, right, who can't stop going to something to numb themselves. And even if I wasn't doing it in my behavior all the time, I was always thinking about, man, if I could just get away and I'd feel better after this. The thing is, after a binge, you always feel worse. So then you're disappointing yourself, you're angry at yourself, and then you go into self-flagellation and punishment. And you guys are going to have to forgive me as if today's episode's a little bit of rambling. There's so much content I want to give you, and I want to be open about my story, but also not bore you with it. I want to encourage you to explore this if you have any kind of relationship with food where at night you feel like it's out of control. The binging often happens at night, not always, but the higher majority happens at night. But if there's ever a point around food that you feel like you don't have control, and for me a binge was an out-of-body experience, I would go, oh, you don't need that, and I would keep thinking about the food. I would keep thinking about, but you've been so good today and you ran 12 miles and you did this, and you know, it's a couple chips won't hurt. And then all of a sudden you ate a little, for me, I would eat just over a portion size, and then I would feel guilt for eating just a little bit too much. And become, when it became more than 100 calories, I would feel guilty, and then I'd say, okay, you're going to stop. It's going to be, you're going to have two portions of that. But then I would notice, well, gosh, this bag of chips is half empty. Oh my gosh, that's three servings. Oh my gosh, I'm a horrible person. And then I would beat myself up. And then there's a point where you go, I don't, you almost becomes an out of body experience where it felt like things got out of control. And I would just watch myself and think, what is going on? Like, how is this? And as that was happening, I was already planning not eating the next day or skipping meals or what time I would wake up to run it all off. And so I just wanted today to be a space where you guys, we can talk about this. Not a lot of people talk about what a binge feels like and the aftermath of it and the feeling, watching yourself and being disappointed in yourself going, I know better, I know better, I know better. What is happening, right? And in my personal training journey, I would say 80% of the clients I worked with struggled with disordered eating, overeating to some capacity. And I would tell them, I think there's so much shame. And they would look at me and go, I'm not going to tell you if I overeat at night. And because I would say, well, like, what does overeating look like for you? Can you get specific? And the shame prevents people from talking about it. If we can't talk about it, we can't make progress on it. And I was able to open up conversations with my personal training clients by saying, look, like, I'm gonna be real with you. This was a big struggle of mine. It used to be like, it kept me back in life. Like, this really did. This affected me socially. This affected me emotionally, affected me mentally, affected me so many ways. It stole life from me, which is why I don't want you chained by binge eating or shame about eating ever again. I want you to step into believing that you can change these patterns. This is not about self-discipline, but there are ways to seek healing and freedom from these, and that you can learn to have self-trust around food again, and you can learn to live your life without obsessively calorie counting or putting pressure on yourself or moralizing food or judging your day of being good or bad based on your eating for the day. All that to be said, it was really helpful for me to tell my clients, like, look, like, you can't scare me. Like, you can't say, I'm not going to think anything less of you if you ate five Oreos or if you ate 25. Because I also understand, there are psychological things that happen and sugar triggers that happen when sometimes things do become out of control. So, and as far as binge eating goes, it affects all individuals of all ages, genders, races, and ethnicities. Although 60% of cases occur in women. The typical range of people that experience this is broader than you might think. It's often really common in adulthood. And so I think sometimes we don't address it because we think, like, I know better. I know better than this. But isn't that an interesting correlation? When do we get more responsibility? When do we have more pressure? When are we trying to keep it all together? And when do we also stop showing up for ourselves and providing a space for plugging ourselves in and rejuvenating ourselves and taking care of our basic human needs throughout the day? It makes sense that there would be a high correlation with binge eating and adulthood. Now, what is binge eating? And definition is, it is, according to the dictionary, it is frequently consuming unusually large amounts of food in one sitting and feeling that eating behavior is out of control. When I thought about it, I wanted to put my own definition out there, and I would say it is the use of food beyond what is pleasurable or intended. I have two other definitions. It is the overconsumption of food for avoidance or pain relief. It is the experience of eating beyond comfort or beyond intent and feeling guilt and shame afterwards. And so binge eating disorder is sometimes, like, officially define a binge, according to Eating Recovery Center, they say a binge is typically defined as an abnormally large amount of food. There are other I found some other websites that say it's 1,000 to 2,000 calories, but I don't really like those definitions. I think they're good guidelines, but call me partial here, but I like my definitions. I like the experience of eating beyond comfort or intent and feeling guilt or shame afterwards. I look at a binge not based on the calorie consumed, but on the feelings experienced and the intent before and the emotions afterwards. So using food beyond what is pleasurable or intended. And sometimes it's not always because you're coming out of a a high stress situation, sometimes we don't even know. We're so busy and so achievement focused that we don't even know that we're stressed. And so something that might start as a pleasurable or very carefree experience with food can go and turn into a binge unintended. And you think, how did this happen? And so I want to encourage you that a binge, all it is it's a red flag. It's a red flag to help you take a look at something else that's going on. I considered binge eating in high achievers as I was preparing for today's episode I want to reiterate, we've already said this, but it's really important to me that you hear this very clearly, because I literally beat myself up for about 5 years about this, because I really took pride in my self-discipline. And I had this challenge of my congruency and who I was. And I felt like I was a fraud, because this is the one area that I wanted to have discipline in that I could not master. And it's because my whole approach was backwards. But I need it. So I'm reiterating that for you today. Binge eating in high achievers is not about lack of self-discipline. It is not about willpower. It is not fixed by a diet or by intermittent fasting. It is a manifestation of food becoming an escape, a drug, a numbing mechanism. And it's often self-corrected. We often self-correct it with punishment, restriction, abusive exercise, purging. But really, you guys, the good news here is it's a heart issue. It's a red flag. If anything that I've said today is resonating with you, I want you to be encouraged, because what it's saying is that there's a void. There's an exhaustion. There's a world of expectations that has become too much on you. And sometimes we self-create an excuse, a reason why we might be failing. And sometimes this is that, or why someone might leave us. Let's just prove that there's something ugly about ourselves. There's so many interesting things we do in our deep subconscious that is self-sabotage. And this is self-sabotage. But it's the good news here is that this isn't about having better discipline, changing your diet, being more focused, getting a nutritionist. This is about doing the hard work, doing the work of your heart. And so I really believe that binge eating is an indication of something needs to change, that something is terribly off kilter. And again, I want to free you. This is not you not being disciplined. This is something deep about your focuses and your priorities that is off kilter. For me and what in my clients, it's also often been a red flag of overwhelm. It's a red flag of isolation and on your ownness. This desire, this kind of misinterpretation that you have to do things on your totally independently, and that you need to prove to the world that you can take care of yourself and that you're all good. So it's a red flag that, hey, that isolation tactic you're doing is not working. It's also a red flag of mismanaged energy and priorities, because we don't get mad at our iPhones when the battery runs low by the end of the day after we've been FaceTiming. Like, if you're using your phone to stream videos, be on YouTube, FaceTime, and it's playing music all day on like Pandora, you're not mad when it starts getting low battery at the end of the day or the afternoon even. What do? You plug it in. We can't be mad at ourselves for not having the energy we want to have the self-discipline at night that's going to quote unquote keep us good around food. It's a mismanagement of energy. We need to find ways throughout the day to nourish ourselves and take care of ourselves. I also think binge eating is an indication that we need to change something about how we care for ourselves. Because when we binge, we give up on ourselves. We give in on being defeated. We throw ourselves a pity party and we go all in. Like for any time for me, I was binging, immediately became a pity party. Woe is me. And I can ride a pity party. Whew. All I got to do is look at my journals from a couple years ago and I'm like, wow, like it's nuts, right? And the more I felt sorry for myself, the more pain and struggle I had, the more I wanted to prove to myself that I was really the mess that I thought I was. And it was self-perpetuating self-pity and self-defeat. So what can you do when we say, okay, so like we need to change something, something's off kilter, what do you do? Well, we're going to talk about that in a second, but in general, get more sleep. Do more that brings you joy. Stop trying to get through the day and instead live the day. Take the pressures off yourself. Stop comparing yourself. Free yourself from the moralization of food. Surround yourself with others. Be vulnerable. Remember that you are brave and you are capable of doing hard things, even of facing hard emotional situations and fears. But honestly, I think for me, the biggest change has been being able to talk about it, finding joy in other places, having more purpose to my life, and being free from this pressure I always felt to prove myself. Understanding who God sees me and how He sees you and how loved you are, and also gives permission to say, live life to the fullest, have this full, abundant, joy-filled life. And that means that sometimes to me that I have to remind myself of that truth. Like, hey, Trish, it's okay to take 20 minutes off and just go walk around without your phone and enjoy the beauty of a day. It's simplifying life in a world that has told us just to do. So the more I've gone counter to that, and I've been able to find more pockets of peace in my life, and I've slowed down a little bit, I'm still achieving. Actually, I'm achieving more now than I ever did before, which is crazy. But it's because I took the pressure off and I focused on how do I live well, but more importantly, how do I love well? I don't want to live and be successful. I want to live and live beautifully. I want to live and have significance based on how I love, right? So it's all about how we're using our words. And that's what I love about confidence coaching and helping people work through some of these issues and these behaviors that they feel like that they have been stuck in. But really what we do is we take the language, we take the words that we're using, and we start using the words differently. You know, I'm a linguist by nature. It's what I studied in school. And it's so funny that I am not using the languages right now that I used to be fluent in, but I am fluent in understanding how to look at a word and how to look at something that maybe someone is thinking, and then take that and retranslate into better, more life-giving language. And that is all we're doing when we talk about our relationship with food and our relationship to binge eating. The minute you free yourself and stop beating yourself up for not being self-disciplined enough, you are going to give yourself right there. You're getting twice your emotional energy back, and you're going to be more capable of using that emotional energy to face whatever true stressors are going on in your life that you're getting pushed down, that are getting pushed down, that are erupting because you're so busy, right? So these things are all interconnected, and it all starts with paying attention, giving yourself permission to think differently, and talking to somebody. So let's talk briefly about how to actually stop binge eating. So if you're someone that you know struggles with this, here are five simple ways. I'm actually going to give you 10 ways, but let's start with five. First, acknowledge that there's a problem. Acknowledge that there's a disordered relationship with food going on. Two, initiate a new relationship with food. I mean, have you ever just considered that? Like, you can say, hey, food, let's start to try to be friends. I want you to talk to food as if it's a relationship, because you are in relationship with food. It's part of life. And you can just say, hey, I realize that the relationship so far has been toxic or abusive, right? One way or the other. I'm ready for a healed relationship. That which leads you to step number three, seek support and help. That is when you go see a therapist, when you work with a coach, when you actually go and seek somebody, counsel beyond yourself. And that's how, if you think about a relationship, a marriage that's gone wrong, a toxic relationship that somebody wants to heal, you've got to talk it through. You've got to get third-party help to help you move forward. Number four, nurture healthy patterns of renewal. And what I mean by that is like the whole iPhone, plug your phone in throughout the day kind of concept. Like, you got to plug you in and find little pockets of ways you can add peace and joy to your life. Little ways that you can pattern disrupt and not go into exhaustion. Set better boundaries. Even slow down your pace. Say no to some of the commitments. Or when you're feeling like you... And that internal dialogue and language that says, oh, gosh, well, I should be doing blah, blah, blah. And you answer it back and go, no, actually, I shouldn't. Right now, I have 15 minutes of scheduled non-productive time. Like, that for me has been an answer of somebody who is wired. I love being productive, but I had to find a way to have these healthy patterns of renewal built in throughout my day so that I wasn't so emotionally exhausted at night. And so sometimes I set the timer. I'm like, okay, 30 minutes of nothing. Like, now I can color with my daughter, and now I'm going to go do this. And I don't know, weed in the backyard, not because it needs to be done, not because it was on my to-do list, but because it kind of feels good to get my hands dirty. That is a way you can start counteracting some of the pressure, behaviors, and thought patterns that are pushing us into these disruptive and toxic behaviors with food. Number five, I think it's really important to take ownership of how it serves you, how binge eating, again, call it emotional eating, call it stress eating. I'm just calling it by the binge eating so we can stop being scared of the phrase. Take ownership of how it serves you. Stop being a victim. I thought, well, I just struggle with binge eating disorder. I kept victimizing it. Well, it's just a disorder. Now there are certain things and diseases and there are challenges to that. But if you stay in a place of victim, you're going to always stay in that victim role. It took me saying, oh, I understand I'm choosing to binge. It's not always out of my control. And if it for me, my binge eating really went, I'm going to ballpark it here for about 10 years, 8 to 9.75 years of those were silent and no one knew. And it was my little secret, horrible personal habit that haunted me. But, and I remember praying all the time, like, take this from me. Like, Lord, like, heal me. Like, help me not be weird around food. What the heck? Like, this is so embarrassing. And the thing is, we're talking to a therapist to realize somebody asked me once, well, how is binging still serving you? You must be, if you're still doing it, there are certain things that we do in life that we know are detrimental. We know make us unhappy. We know are making us sick. But sometimes we still do them because we still get something from them. And so I had to look at that and go, wow, this has become such a pattern. It still serves me because I don't know what the pattern isn't. I didn't know how to think differently. And I didn't know I didn't have any healthy ways to manage my emotions. I didn't know effective journaling the way I do now. And so food was the way for me to kind of air out my heart. And really not air it out, sweep it under the carpet and give myself a distraction, something else. I wanted, it was the problem. It was a self-perpetuating problem that kept me so focused and down that I didn't have to think about the problems I actually had. And so it's really important to realize, why are you doing it? There is something and that was serving me in some way. And so when you realize what it's serving you, you say, I think I can find another way to fill that need. And that's when I started picking up journaling again. I think I can find another way to fill the need of managing my emotions rather than keeping on this like crazy pendulum of crazy on, crazy off, crazy on, crazy off, right? Punishment and all the things. And so, and by the way, if you aren't sure where to journal, and if what I'm saying is resonating, you want to start journaling, I have a free journaling guide and a whole template that I use that has been life-changing for me. You can get that at trishblackwell.com/freedom journal. I'll put it in the show notes for you. So that way, all you have to remember is to listen to the show, to go get the show notes and everything and some links and references that I mentioned about binge eating. You can go to trishblackwell.com/380, which is going to give you the show notes for episode 380, which is today's episode. Now, I did want to add one other thing. I have five steps on. So in review, how to stop binge eating. Number one, accept that there's acknowledge that there's a problem. Number two, initiate a new relationship with food. Number three, seek support and help. Number four, nurture healthy patterns of renewal. Number five, take ownership of how it serves you. And let's let the shame go. Shame keeps you stuck, doesn't do anything. I want you stepping into freedom. And I know it's there for you. And honestly, you guys, I thought I was the worst candidate ever. Like, I felt like my binge eating was so secretive and so shameful and so bad and so embarrassing that I would never be able to break free from it. I would never be healed from it. And so I got to say, if I can do it, you can do it, because I was a lost, sorry case. But God is good, y'all. and you are getting the resources and tools you need to start. If you're feeling overwhelmed, you feel like, well, this has been a pattern for so many years. Could it really change? And, you know, you might be thinking, well, it's not so bad. Well, if it's disruptive to your life in any way, and then it's bad enough. If it's disrupting your confidence, your joy, your health, your relationships in any way, it's bad enough. This disrupted, I have distinct memories in college of saying no to going out for ice cream with people because I was already embarrassed and I had oversnacked and I felt shame and I just stayed in my room for the weekend. Like, it affects relationships. This isn't just about you. It affected relationships I was in. So I wanted to share five more tips. If you're a faith-based person, then there are five additional approaches to consider. I'm going to breeze through those as well. Number one, surrender your desires to God. Tell him what's on your heart. He's our friend. He's so eager to listen and he cares. He's not far off. If he can count the number, he knows the number of hairs on your head. That's just not because he's like, well, I made him or her. No, to me, being able to count the hairs on your head is an indication that he's close and he cares. It's intimate. So talk to God. Tell him what's really on your heart, what's bothering you about this, and your desire to break free and to have healing, and that this isn't part of your story anymore. Number two, pray for wisdom to turn to him, to turn to God to fill you when you feel empty. And that's something I still do in my daily life, of when I feel those tingles of like irritation or anxiety and emptiness, I realize, okay, there's something going on in my heart. My prayer becomes, hey, Lord, show me what's going on. Like sometimes I just have to ask for help and wisdom. Hey, what? I feel antsy. Why? Can you help me see why? And he'll give you clarity. Ask and you shall receive. Number three, break patterns of putting food and image too high by using worship music. I think worship music changed everything for me. And I have a link. If you go to the show notes, I have a whole blog with my top 20 worship songs that encourage me. And it's the best worship music songs to listen to encourage your heart. Use worship as your weapon. If you're feeling, I don't know, you're thinking about food, you're overthinking it, or you're fantasizing, or you're just like, oh, I wish I could just run away. Put on worship music. Let that be how you worship and how you do war. Like it is how you fight your battles. And that's how, for me, it's been really helpful for breaking some of these patterns. And honestly, and if you're not coming from a faith perspective, even, I mean, I'm talking about worship music here, but using just music that makes you happy, using music to change your state can change your behavior and your emotional response to the stress that you feel. Music is so, so incredibly powerful in helping break the patterns of binge eating. It's crazy. I mean, it's crazy. It sounds too simple, but I'm telling you firsthand, it works. And then number four, let yourself feel the emotions and pain that you are avoiding. Trust God to step in. He wants to hear. He can take your cares and carry them for you. But give yourself the space to feel it. And I want to remind you guys, you can do hard things. These hard emotional things that we obviously are so bothered by, that we bury them down and we try to numb them out with food, with alcohol, with sex, with drug, with whatever, with purchasing and shopping at Target or over shopping on Amazon. We all have our things that we do, our avoidance behaviors. Anytime you see an avoidance behavior of any type, and I'm not just talking about food, today's episode in particular is about food as avoidance, but we have avoidance behaviors. And those are just indications of like, hey, go deeper. Don't run. Don't avoid. You are not a coward. You are brave. You were made for this. You are being called to this. You are courageous enough to do hard things and to look at these things. And that's why I love do one thing every day that scares you. I love that Eleanor Roosevelt quote. I love building this relationship and collaboration between courage and confidence, because I do believe they go hand in hand. And then finally, as far as the faith-based steps, ask yourself daily what you will put first in your life, food or God. Now, on the surface, that sounds so obvious. But I had a lot of conviction about that in my life. That was really, really, that was a struggle. That was a struggle. And hey, I'm going, you got open heart, Trish, here. Like, I already think I've told you enough that you have plenty of room to judge me, to look down on me, to have lots of opinions about my bad habits or things I've struggled with. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to tell you where my struggles were, because hopefully that my transparency will help you be able to be comfortable being honest about your own, however they manifest. And then you can seek the healing, and then you can go help others. You guys, we are a movement of people gaining and growing in confidence and courage so that we can go help others. And another side note, self-pressure and self-punishment and self-punition will keep you stuck in a cycle. Self-compassion is the first step in your heart to find peace and healing. So self-compassion, you've got to stop beating yourself up. Stop beating yourself up over any avoidance behaviors. Start saying, hey, wow, if you're doing that, there must be something deeper going on. Hey, friend, like what's up, right? If you're lashing out at yourself, you're doing things that you're like, I don't even know why I'm doing this. Don't punish yourself. Don't put pressure on yourself to quote unquote do better. Let's start with self-compassion, because the self-punishing and self-pressure, we know that that perpetuates the cycle. That's not changing anything. If you want to change anything, we've got to change our approach, and that's self-compassion. So again, self-compassion is the first step in your heart to find peace and healing. Now, what are some other resources to help? I've got these listed out for you. We've already mentioned the Freedom Journal, which you can get at trishblackwell.com/freedom journal. Again, that's a free download, and I will send you a couple of videos, seven videos over 7 days of just like 2 or 3 minutes in length to talk you through and coach you through the journaling process. I also already mentioned the best worship songs to encourage your heart, which you can get that blog link. It's trishblackwell.com. You can just go to the blog or click the link from the show notes. Then, of course, I have my program, The Donut Diet, which you can find at thedonutdiet.com. It's spelled D-O-N-U-T for donut. And that's a 6-week journey where I teach you how to eat, how to learn to trust yourself around food again. So if you want to work on your relationship with food, I would love for you to check out The Donut Diet. And then, of course, we work with everybody on all things, confidence, courage, healthy patterns, and really more than anything, your thoughts. And everything we talked about today is about the thoughts you use and paying attention to what's really going on and having the courage to face versus to cope and have coping mechanisms and numbing mechanisms. And that's a lot of the work that we do with our students in the College of Confidence. We would love to have you join us in the College of Confidence. You may not know this, but it's the most affordable life coaching on the internet right now. For less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you get access to 30 plus courses, 15 plus quick win courses. Resources out of the wazoo, plus really more importantly, live coaching calls and then personal support access with me and the rest of the College of Confidence community. And we are a family. So we would love for you to join us. You can find us at collegeofconfidence.com. You guys, we're going to close with our listener of the week. But please, if you haven't yet subscribed to the show, make sure you hit subscribe. Our next episode is going to be so good. I had a couple people request it. It's going to be how to find the right friends and people. Like you hear all the time, hey, you're like the 5 people you spend time with, but you're like, what if I don't like those 5 people? How do I find the right people? How do I find the right friends? How do I find other focused people versus self-focused people? Maybe you're frustrated with your friend circle and you feel like you're the only one putting effort in or in the relationship that you're in. We're going to talk about how to find the right people, how to be the right person to have amazing relationships, but also how to confidently pursue and navigate the social waters of finding the right friends and people. Now, our listener of the episode is Olivia. And she reached out on Instagram. She said, hey, Trish, I've been listening to your podcast for a few months now, and I can definitely say I've been moved to tears multiple times. I listen while I'm on my commute to and fro, a very adrenaline-driven job as an ER nurse. And so listening to your words definitely resets my mindset and sets me up to be much more successful through my thought process throughout the day. So thank you for everything you do. God bless you. And sister, we've already been in touch, and I'm so excited to continue encouraging you. And you guys, I love hearing from you. It means the world to know. I love hearing, when do you listen? Like, when is this most encouraging for you? Who are the friends that you're passing this show on to? How can we as a community help more women rise up and be light in this world, light on a hill, light in a way that people don't have to keep putting up these giant walls and these facades of perfectionism and all the pressures? Like, man, we can have such a better experience. But it starts with how you live. It starts with how I live and how you live and how we encourage others. So do me a favor today. Go encourage somebody. Go be honest. Go be vulnerable and encouraging. Go out there today. Go be more of who you are. Be you. Be free. Thanks for hanging out today. If you've enjoyed today's episode of the Confidence Podcast, we invite you to check out collegeofconfidence.com. The College of Confidence is the essential resource for anyone committed to training their thoughts and elevating their confidence. Students in the College of Confidence get exclusive access to my best coaching resources and courses, and it's all done at a self-study pace that will fit into anyone's lifestyle. If you're looking for the next step beyond the podcast, this is it. With our extensive course library, monthly trainings, live coaching calls, and exclusive Ask Anything forum, you get the most affordable and accessible coaching support available online. The College of Confidence is a supportive, active community to help you along the way with feedback, encouragement, and advice. It is the place where we coach you to step confidently into the calling that God created you to live out. Check it out and join us today at collegeofconfidence.com.